You've been through pre-Cana, maybe you've even said I do. And now what? Welcome to After Cana, a podcast for young couples looking to make it until death do they part. In each episode, we'll share sage wisdom and practical advice for couples who have been married for 20 plus years. Today's episode, we have Pilar and Guido Caranti, who are originally from Argentina, but now live in Houston. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
We're happy to have you. Could you start us off by just telling us a little bit about yourselves, how you met, dating, engagement, and marriage?
Yes, we can.
All right. Should I start?
Yes, you should start.
Okay. So, well, I'm Pilar. I am originally, like Guido, from Argentina. And I am a psychologist from Argentina and a life coach. And here I became a life coach, a few years ago. And then, you can say,
I'm from a very small town in rural Argentina. Met Pilar in Buenos Aires. We got married there and moved to the US 28 years ago, 27 years ago. I came here because I was getting a master's in business in the University of Texas. We came thinking that we'll be here for 2 years, and
here we are.
Here we are, 27 years later. We have 6 kids, 2 born in Argentina, and 4 here.
Ages 28 through 16.
Wow. And how old were you guys when you guys met?
So I was like 19 probably, and it was a blind date. A friend of mine, she was on a blind date, and she told me, well, that the guy that I'm going out is bringing a friend. So, he asked me to bring a friend. So so that's how it was. We
both of us wanted to cancel that. But this was before cell phones, so neither of us could get hold of our friends.
It's harder to cancel.
So
we ended up going.
We ended up going, and I would say it was love at first sight.
Wow.
We really enjoyed that first date. We went out dancing. Very late in Argentina, everything is very late, and we came back at dawn. It took him a while to call me back, maybe a month or so, but it was at the end of the school year in Argentina, so in November the first time we met. And then a friend of mine invited me to the town where he is from, although he was living in Buenos Aires at the time. But I told my friend, oh, I met this guy, why don't we call him up? So I looked up his phone on the phone book and give him a call. And the dad said, oh, no. So I was like, oh, I'm a girl that went out with him in Buenos Aires. And I'm staying, in this area, in the town next to his town.
Reality is that I told her in the first day that I rode horses, and what she wanted was to use my horses with this. She was being followed. So anyway, I had decided to stay in Buenos Aires that weekend to call this girl. So I called, and they told me that she wasn't there. So I went to the bus station. I took a bus to go see my parents. It's a 12-hour bus ride. And when I get to my parents' house, they tell me that this girl had called and that she was in the town.
But anyway, he got his motorcycle and went to look for me. I don't know. He was hoping to find me in the street. I don't know what the deal was, but the point was that he didn't find me. And then he went back home. And the dad says, oh, I know, she must be staying at this house that they rent. So the dad picked up the phone and he called me and he says, okay, I am Guido and I am going to have tea. you know, I wasn't there. So I, when I showed up, you know, her sister, my friend's sister said, well, you know, Guido's called and he's coming for tea. So it was like, wow. So anyway, and then, yeah, we went out and played, we had tea, and then we went out to have, you know, play paddle tennis that was popular at the time in Argentina. And I was playing with him, but I told my friend, oh no, he's not good. I don't think I like him very much because he doesn't play this sport very well. And I am competitive and I was good and this guy couldn't play. So, but anyway, then the following day he took us horseback riding and then his, you know, his points went up again and was like, wow, you know? So, so anyway, that's how we started kind of dating. And right.
So how long from that point until engagement, like how long did you guys date?
We dated
for
3 years. Yes.
Well, we don't have engagement in Argentina. We just talk about marriage and so
then you do
such
it.
Things. So yeah,
yes,
then
yes.
You do.
Then you know he went to see my dad and asked for, you know, permission and all that and that's how it went, you know. So yeah, we got married. I was still in school, the last year of my undergrad is 5 years there. So was so I said, well, the year starts in March, and then you finish in December. So I said we got married, like, you know, our anniversary was 2 days ago on March 25th, 29 years. So we said, okay, let's get married, and in case we get pregnant right away, at least I can finish school. So it was providential because that is exactly what happened. I got pregnant in the honeymoon, and then our son was born in January, our son Pedro. So anyway, so yeah, that's one of the things that, you know, we're so excited about, you know, start a family right away.
Do you remember like any, like, because I feel like the first year, I mean, I'm still in my first year, but there's so much happening and it's also new. Do you remember being surprised or anything kind of standing out that was different from what you anticipated in marriage? Or was it all kind of like,
well, you know, I guess it's different for everybody. I have three brothers, so there's no girls in my growing up.
Wow.
So for me, it was a surprise in many ways.
I would say it was difficult.
Yeah.
I would say it was difficult at the beginning. Yeah, not everything was roses, you know, getting used to the married life and all that is not so easy. And I know here and in, you know, in Argentina too, they do the pre-cana. Well, we didn't do any pre-cana.
Really?
Yeah. You know, we felt we didn't need it. I don't know. But I mean, I think we would have benefited from it. But so we had to learn kind of the hard way. But
yeah,
we knew that this is what we wanted and that we, you know, we were in for the long haul. So.
Yeah, one goes into marriage a little bit naively in the sense that you daydream about it. I don't know if that's a word, but thinking that you're going to find someone that matches you in all your tastes and in everything about life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so removed from the truth. First, the focus of that women have in life is totally different from what us guys have. We are focused on goals. Women are more focused on the process of life and what happens every day, in how do you, you know, leave order in the house. You know, it's. I read some time ago. Philosopher said, you know, that women are more attuned to the process of life, where
mm-hmm.
we're just looking for the goal without paying much attention of what I do today at home, for the life at home, and that's a different worldview that of course generates tension, a very necessary tension, because we both have to bring each other to to what's important about those two worldviews. They're not worldviews, but they are approaches to life. Mm-hmm. So that's why marriage is so important, is because apart we have a partial view of what life is about, I think. You know, the life outside the home, the work, or the bringing the resources home, it's important. But then how you use that then to live well and bring love to the home is more the focus that that women bring. But that takes years and decades to learn. That basically we both have an incomplete view of what marriage is, and it's that that combination of the two incomplete views what makes marriage great.
100%.
That happens only with friction. You know that and that friction is what's actually good. That friction needs to happen so that the two worldviews really produce the result that it needs to produce, because both perspectives are necessary. The thing is that the process is not.
So Piero, you know, here we were at the beginning, you know, as he says, you know, it was you know, this process of adaptation, and we were pregnant. You know, I was feeling school, finishing school. You know, he started studying for his GMAT. In order to be able to come to the US. So after a year and a half, we moved to the US. You know, we left our families behind and we started a life of our own, you know, far away, removed from our families. And not only we were going to another city, but we were going to another country with everything that entails. And so we had a lot of stress, so to speak, in our life. Just because of those circumstances, you know,
a lot of friction that more than that was already present.
But you know, it's not that we were thinking, oh, this is, I made a mistake. No, we never thought that. But you know, it was hard work, I would say.
Yeah.
Now we are enjoying the fruits and we love it. But you know, yeah, those years. I mean, I know they seem a blur also because my. You know, my kids were, you know, kind of close in age. And so I was very busy with that. And
one thing that I don't want to leave out is that, you know, the first time that I seriously talked to Peter about dating, you know, kind of what came out of my mouth, it was, you know, basically, yeah. I see that you would be an incredible mother. I didn't use those words, but I wanted to form a good family. I thought I came from a good one, and I wanted to create, you know, our own good family. And I saw in Pilar that immediately. I can't describe what it was, but anyway. And I also, you know, when I would say that I was daydreaming about what my wife would be, I was always thinking of someone that was very mellow, very
submissive
and really, you know, that would look up to every taste that I had. It was, you know, just an affirmation of me at every step, you know, and it couldn't be, yeah, I couldn't have picked someone the furthest from that idea. But precisely in that is that I saw this girl is going to be an awesome mother, because she has tremendous resolve for anything. And actually an aggressiveness that is impressive. not in a bad way, but you know.
Thank you.
I think it's important to understand that, like, I'm not exactly a submissive person either. And so on my first date with my husband, he kind of made something, you know, a passive remark about how he hadn't really looked into the restaurant. And I looked at him and I was like, you don't say that on a first date. And he looked at me and he was like, yeah, you're right. You're right. But he talks about how he appreciates, like, as someone who was, he was very kind to say forthcoming. I say blunt. But mm-hmm. in marriage, I think when you talk about friction being good, it's like, that is at least what I've found is like the sanctifying part of marriage, mm-hmm. where it's like, sometimes we need friction to, mm-hmm. you know, make us grow in those places where maybe when we were single, we weren't. So I do appreciate, mm-hmm. My husband is not the person that I thought I would marry either when I thought I would marry someone.
And it's a great complementarity, you know. Mm-hmm. I also didn't want somebody that had a strong personality and strong character like me, you know. But at the same time, I did want someone that could control me. Mm-hmm. And he can, despite being, you know, much nicer and, you know, calm and meek.
I tell you a story. One of the first times that I went to her home when we just started dating, you know, in their parents' house, the yard was surrounded by a wall it wasn't too high, and the sidewalks on the other side, and a guy walking on the sidewalk kind of tiptoed and looked over the wall
because he saw us, you know, talking.
You know, she's,
he was curious because we were talking,
and Pilar goes, "What are you looking at?" And I'm like,
good question. I think, like, there are just some moments where it's like, you know, your personality really shines through. And I think, kind of to that, do you think you guys have changed in your marriage, like, in these 29 years? Like, do you think the friction has caused change, or
I think in the way it has changed, I think we both kept our personalities, but we really learned as to when the other, I know when her personality is necessary, and I guess she knows when my personality is necessary, and we let the other act in the situation that requires that personality.
We've learned to respect. You know, at least in my case, I've learned to respect, you know, he's slower than me and he thinks through, you know, and, you know, I sometimes try not to push him, you know, as much. So I think, I would say we did change, of course. That friction could have lasted 29 years for sure. So yes, we did change.
But yeah. Do you think that also changed when kids came along pretty soon for you guys, but do you see your personalities complementing each other more in terms of parenthood as well as marriage? Or have you grown and changed in that way as well too?
Yeah, no, I think it's a great compliment. Our personalities in parenting, they have been great.
I think they have been great. It's difficult to describe how, but I think I would have been a lot more permissive. And I'm glad that Peter is a drill sergeant. I don't know that that's the right way to put it, but I really welcome that and try to, you know. And I brought a whole different element that I don't know how to describe it. But,
yeah. Oh, well, I mean, he's much more calmer than me, so I think that's great for the kids. Also, he's very very easygoing, so the kids really value that. They have a great relationship with him. They're not afraid of him at all, you know. But when he has to say something, he says it, you know, which is not very often. I mean, says something that needs to be said, you know, be strong. So in that sense, I think our children have really benefited from his leadership and his personality. especially I think the girls. He's a great dad for my girls. You know, how important it is for
the boys.
Yes, but for the girls, I think, I mean, for the boys also, that's why I said at the beginning, he was very good. But I think how important it is for the guys to be close to the daughters.
Mm-hmm.
So affectionate to the daughters and compliment their daughters. So, you know, I think, you know, my girls really have benefited from that kind of dad they had. He's awesome.
And I would say for us, it was, I think it's good that the women has a strong character, and if they don't, that they try to, you know, to develop that. Because mom is always going to be mom, you know. Pilar has always, you know, been more the disciplinarian at home. But once I got angry at not at my boys, at the TV, because the TV was, you know, there was an indecent ad in maybe in the Super Bowl or something like that. And I got mad at the TV, and one of our sons said, you know. I don't remember the story, but basically that I was scary to them. And she's not. And they said, no, mom is not scary. Although the one, you know, being the Virginia is her. So I think mothers can be try to force themselves to be disciplinarians. And they're never gonna really hurt their boys. I think fathers, even when we try to be mellow, you know, we can become scary. If, you know, and you see that a lot in families where dads are like just too strong.
Yeah, no, that's so true. And I think that's why it's like, I look at my husband and I know that at some point when we have kids, like, because he is quieter when he says something, and it goes for me too, like when he says something, I know he means it, but I feel like I just talk, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think there is that complementarity in the that's like so necessary to raising kids, and like God knows what He's doing when He puts two people together to form a family, and it really is something that, even if it doesn't look exactly like what you thought it would look like I also thought I would marry someone with a very strong personality. My husband is much more like quiet and chill and mellow. And I have come to,
and it's great that you know that now.
Yeah.
You know, we learned it with the benefit of hindsight. We look at this 29 years, and it's always, you say, you know, it was God's plan to put us together. We complement each other so much. The thing is, in our case, what you're complimenting is not this with this, is this with, you know, we are personality-wise, we're so far apart that we have to come a long way to be
so far apart. However, we have many, I mean, of course, we share the same values and we the same interests. We share, I mean, not everything, but, you know, many things we share. Right.
Love for nature, you know, love for, you know, the outdoors, love for music.
Well, like
horseback riding,
and of course, you know, or you know, the care of the families and care of other families, you know. We organize vacations for families in Beaver Creek, Colorado, called Family Summer for 6 years, and this has been, you know, our project for the almost 10 years. And so, I mean, we couldn't have done it if the other one would not have been on board. You know, we both felt very strongly about this, and we did it. We were in charge also of family enrichment here in Texas, and we were behind that. And now we're starting another, you know, project on, and we have a property out in the country, and the town has, you know, many prisons in the area. So we started visiting one of the prisons, and that is something that we share. It's not that I have to drag him to go to the prison, or he has to drag me to go, you know, usually we have those, you know, those things that we share despite having a different and very, you know,
complementary personality.
Yes, I would say that.
And that is important when, especially when you're brought together to form a family, because I feel like if there's not that unifying factor of like goals, virtues, like what you want out of life, I feel like that's something that's really hard to manufacture, you know? And so if that's
We do have a lot of things in common, and now we're almost empty nesters and we're still very young. I feel, you know, I'm 51, he's 54. And we have many years ahead of us, and we're not in panic mode saying, oh, what am I going to do with it? No, throughout our, you know, having kids and all that, raising our family, we did a lot of things together. We did, you know, we made sure we traveled by ourselves, you know, together. You know, we went to play tennis. I was pregnant. I remember we played tennis at night. I don't know how I even did it. Right now it's like, oh, I want to go to bed early. So, but we did a lot of things throughout these years, you know, to keep that that love going, and I would say to put ourselves as a priority and not the kids. So now we're finding ourselves in our, you know, early 50s and almost empty nesters, but we're thrilled about it. We are super excited about it, and we have a lot of projects and ideas and things we want to do, and we're doing already.
No grandkids yet.
No grandkids.
I'm sure they'll come in due time. I know we talked a little bit before about like friction and stuff, good friction. But do you guys remember the biggest fight that you guys had?
We were talking about that because, you know, I knew that was going to be one of your questions. I was saying we fought a lot, but there's not one. They were all at the same level, I would say. It's all disagreements over trivial stuff or my lack of order or her impatience, stuff like that. Just usually trivial things. And the big things we agree generally.
That make the daily life more difficult. You know, his disorder, my impatience, those things. Yes, but also I am. You know, sometimes we don't have the same expectations. About, you know, communication, and I think those are the issues that we struggle the most in the communication issues. So, but you know, nothing that is not solvable. So, I like to read books, and as I share things with him, it's not that we put them in practice a lot. I mean, we're not very disciplining in putting in practice. I mean, I read a lot and I get something from here and there, but at the end of the day, you know, I do how it comes. But I, you know, some people are very structured. When they read a book, they do it, you know, A, B, C. We don't do that. So those books are helpful. You know, I would recommend the books of, you know, I am blanking on his name, Coleman. Seven Habits for Highly Successful, for Making Marriage Work, or something like that. I cannot believe I'm blanking totally on the exact name, but in any case, yes. So those are things that I do think are valuable, and you know, in some marriages they have helped a lot. And the talks we went, the different lectures we went to, and you know, all the parenting things that we organize, helps us a lot. You know, we do a lot of that also. You know, but one of the things that I wanted to mention regarding this, you know, the fights that you were saying, if we had, you know, what was the biggest fight, and I know we said, well, you know, they're all the same level. We couldn't remember about the time that I, you know, threw a plate at, you know, that didn't happen. But what I think what is important is, you know, how you solve those conflicts. Okay. And one of the things that I think is important in marriage, and I think our kids have appreciated a lot, is the fact that we, well, we're both Catholic, and we do have, you know, an intense prayer life.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, having God in your marriage is like super important, right? So and it's not something that it's outside. It's like very much ingrained in us and part of our marriage. So I think that has been very, very, very helpful. And actually, right now we're taking a course on theology of the body, a very practical course in prayer that includes prayer. I mean, it includes theory, prayer, and, you know, some practical exercises. And we're doing it together, although it's like one or the other, right? It's not four couples, but we are doing it together. And, you know, we're seeing, wow, this is amazing. So I would highly recommend, it's not that this is the first time that we hear about theology of the body, but I would highly recommend that newlyweds take a course on theology of the body, but not just the theory, just take it to the practical part, take it to your heart. So I will highly, I mean, now I am a fan of theology of the body. I'm telling everybody, everybody married, single, you know, celibate, everybody should know about this. This is a great treasure, and it's like revolutionary, I think. So that was to say that, you know, I think it is important to really make God part of your life, and to help you work hard, you know, in solving those problems in your marriage, and also in, you know, in developing a good relationship per se.
Mm-hmm.
Have something to add on that?
No.
Okay.
I was going to ask this. I might edit it out because this might be a selfish question on my end, but you guys are dealing with each other's like opposite personalities. Like, obviously it's been 29 years and you've grown to respect and love. Was there anything in the early days that kind of helped you have either patience or understanding with the other? I feel like I'm Latina, so I'm very used to like big conversations, lots of emotions, you know, when there's a family disagreement, we're all yelling at each other, and then 5 minutes later, we're all okay, you know, but my husband is not Latino, so it's a little scary. But I think one of the things I'm noticing in my marriage currently is, you know, working on having patience with him. I don't know, and like, I know he's having patience with me, but was there anything that you guys did, whether during disagreements or in just daily life, that kind of helped you learn to like respect and understand each other's personalities?
We're still working.
No, but I think one of the things that we did was like, I mean, as I said, reading, you know, books that can help you. We also did family enrichment. That you know, this is these parenting courses that use the case study method. So the good thing about them, I think, is that at least for me, was that I realized that, you know, he had a different perspective and it was valuable.
Mm.
So that helped me a lot. So I can transpose that to, he has a different personality, and that's okay too. You know, my personality is not the only one. It's not the best one. So I think you know, of course, reading books and, you know, listening to podcasts and, you know, taking courses, those are the tools that, you know, I think are useful and helpful to, you know, to kind of work on those differences.
Mm-hmm.
I preparing for some of these talks that we give, I read this, you know, this idea of why cohabitation is bad, you know, the idea that you have to test whether you can live with the other one to see if you're going to love them in marriage. And what this author was saying is that you don't love each other because you can live together. You can live together because you love each other. this outside of love, living together, a man and a woman, is an impossibility because our perspectives are so different. So the idea of marriage is forever, I have to make this work, is essential. If you think that, you know, if getting out of it is a possibility for you because you're not getting along, well, it's guaranteed that it's not going to work for you because you're not going to get along. I mean, that's it's you make it work because you know it's forever, and it's a matter that living together is a matter of the will. It's I'm going to make this work because it has to work. And many others, I mean, zillions of people made it work, so I'm going to make it work too. When in your environment, a lot of people didn't make that choice and decided to separate and divorce, then you start to think that that's a possibility and you're going to run into difficulties and you're going to walk away. So that's... So yeah. there were times that were like probably both of us thinking, how is this going to work? And well, I have to, you know, I have to make it work.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. I think that's
because our perspectives are so different. The thing is, with time, you turn back and look at that and you laugh. So you see, but at the time, it wasn't.
Right. Yeah. No, that's so true. And I think that's the beauty of like. Marriage is forever, and the idea it's like we have no choice but to make this work because we've committed to each other. And I mean, you guys are proof.
And we're not saying this because we're Catholic and we believe that marriage is for life, but because you know, it's something that even people that are not, you know, religious say that. You know, I remember reading this book, The Alpha Female's Guide to Men and Marriage, by Suzanne Venker, is her last name. She, you know, completely not religious, and she said one of the first things is like, this is, you know, if you go into marriage thinking that you are gonna get divorced, I mean, forget it, you're gonna do it. So how important it is to have that lifelong commitment.
Not thinking that you are going to get divorced, but you're thinking that you could.
That right.
But if it doesn't work, that if it doesn't work, well, let me tell you, it doesn't work. You make it work. You know?
That's a good point. It's yeah. A free will.
Yeah, a priest friend of ours told Pilar that marriage is a miracle because it, you know,
yeah,
because it's two very different perspectives in love.
Yeah,
and they're both necessary. 100%. So.
Yeah. Do you have any advice for couples who are either engaged and about to get married or who are newlyweds? Do you have anything that you think would really help them as they're starting out on their marriage?
What I would say is in line with what I've been telling you, and it's that have the humility to know that you only have half of the picture of what life should be about. So really ingrain that in your mind. And when you interact with your spouse and he comes out of the blue from a perspective that you don't understand, really have the humility to think, well, I'm sure that's important too, you know. So both need to recognize where the other one is coming from. And in general, you know, in general, in families, mom is going to be focused on how does the family function inside the home when dad comes back from work. And while that in his head, he's still working because that's his goal. And what happens inside the house is kind of, well, you know, I already put money in the bank account. So that is not the too important. And then for the woman is, what do I care what you do outside? You know, if inside of the home is not working as perfectly as I want it to, and the woman doesn't understand what burden men feel on their shoulders about making what he's doing outside work, because it's not easy. And there's a lot of pressure and a lot of, you know, that he wants to kind of relax when he gets back home. But then we come back home and say, how can she not understand that, you know, that I have all this burden on me, you know? And at the same time, we have to think, you know, why can, what good I'm good for the family if I'm not there present when I'm back, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's both sides need to put themselves in the shoes of the other. Anyway.
Okay, so unfortunately, we know several couples that have divorced in, you know, recently after many years of, you know, marriage. And I was talking with one of my friends, and she was saying, well, I got married, I wasn't so sure, but I thought I could change him.
Mm.
You know, I thought I could change him. And that was a big mistake, because you don't have to go into marriage thinking, oh, I would change him. So pay attention, you know, what, I mean, is it important what you need to change? Or do you want to change in the other or not? How important is it, you know? If he drinks coffee or not drink coffee, well, that's not very important, right? But if there are other things that are deeper that you think, oh, I'm going to change him. No, that's not the good way to go into marriage. And really take care in preparing for marriage. In whatever church you get married, you know, just make sure they have a good marriage preparation. Because I think it is important, although we didn't do it, and we're still here, but we're still together. But I think it is important, you know, to do a good, you know, marriage prep. My friend actually was telling me, she's, you know, filing for annulment, and she was saying, if they would have given me those questions that I am answering now, before getting married, I would have never gotten married. That's exactly what she said. And I was like, wow. So I don't think, you know, the pre-Cana courses work that way. In a way, I wish they would. But, you know, don't be so naive and really, you know, prepare well. Learn about theology of the body is my other advice, I would say. Learn about that. You know, there's the Theology of the Body Institute in Philadelphia. And also in relation to that, there's the Healing Institute in Tallahassee, Florida. Both have courses that are important and that they complement each other and are very helpful, because one of the things that I also see, both my husband and I come from, you know, pretty good families, I would say, that there's a lot of wounds in people. People come very, very wounded. Very wounded from families that are being dysfunctional, or maybe not as dysfunctional, but, you know, their relationship with their parents, you know, have not been very good, and that creates a lot of damage, mm-hmm. in each one's psychology. So sometimes it's very difficult to overcome those wounds in your marriage, you know. So I think that is something that is important, to recognize that we are all wounded and that we need to be healed. So I would like to emphasize that point. So so basically, I think that's it.
Yeah.
And frequent the sacraments, of course. If you're Catholic, you know, frequent the sacraments, pray. I think those are essential. Not only for the marriage, but for the raising of the kids.
Mm-hmm.
Important for the kids to see that unity of life that one is trying to live and the marriage that we are trying to live, it's important for them to see that and to get that example from the parents.
Yeah. Oh, that's totally true. Thank you guys for spending this time with us. I was wondering if, as we wrap up, you could lead us in the prayer to Mary, Mother of Fairest Love.
The Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. Amen. Mary, Mother of Fairest Love, you are the Mother of Jesus and our Mother. Intercede for us with your Son, as you did at the wedding at Cana. Pray for us, Fairest Mother, to strengthen and bless our families. Help those called to marriage to find their spouses and teach them to love with a pure and selfless love. Accompany parents in the upbringing and education of their children with unconditional love. Help those who have answered the Father's call with a consecrated life or to apostolic celibacy to be generous and faithful to their vocations. Bring peace, unity, and joy to the homes of families that are broken or burdened. Accompany with the warmth of your presence those who are alone. You are the Mater Pulcre Dilectionis, the Mother of Beautiful Love. Help us to love as Jesus loves, so we may show each other love full of mercy and forgiveness. May all our love and affections be always faithful, pure, and chaste. Dear Mother, be our refuge in our material and spiritual needs, and intercedes especially for all those couples that are newlyweds, or the ones that are in, that have been in the road for long, and for those who are considering marriage. May we grow in love and come to know true peace and joy now and in the life to come in heaven. Amen.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of After Cana. If you enjoyed listening, share it with a friend, subscribe, and leave a review, or visit us at fairestloveshrine.org.